Hello there, I'm James Lilex, and this is The Diner. On the air since 1997, on the web since 2005, and now available in handy podcast form. It's Friday, January 20th, 2006. Welcome. And I'm back at my usual spot at the long boomerang-patterned Formica counter. Turquoise, of course. If you want to drop by the diner, as ever, is on Highway 23, Old Highway 23. And it's about 18 and a half minutes from wherever you happen to be right now. Just get in your car, start driving, looking for a diner, and you'll find it. I'll be the fellow at the end of the counter, huddled over a warm mug of Theraflu. Not shivering over it. The shivering seems to be gone, and I seem to be better. I was struck with five kinds of unpleasantness yesterday. Five different flavors. I have no idea what it was. Some fungu. It wasn't respiratory. It wasn't necessarily GI. It was just bad. Dengue fever. It's bad. Characterized mostly by the chills, the aches, exhaustion. So I turned the heat up in the place, the house, to the sort of level that you would associate with Humphrey Bogart going to see, you know, the Sternwoods to get a deal. Remember that in To Have and Have Not? Or The Big Sleep? One of those Bogart movies. I never can keep them quite straight. Perhaps because they make no sense. It's The Big Sleep, that's it. Where he goes to see Carmen Sturwood's father, and there he is in a wheelchair. It was a staple, I swear, of 1940s noir on the radio and in books and in movies, that inevitably the hero would be hired by an old man in a wheelchair who was very vital and very, but yet somehow near death, and gruff, and blunt, and rich, and sweaty, wheeling himself around in an orchid hothouse, barking instructions at the Seamus that he just hired. Well, anyway, I was sort of feeling like that fellow without the rich, gorgeous daughter, or the orchids, or the Bogart character sweating and mopping his brow in my house while he took my instructions and my money. Other than that, utterly the same. So, mostly I just sort of ached. How was it? That ache that you feel when your muscles, it's as though your entire muscular system has been injected with some sort of bright, glistening mercury running up and down your striated tissues. It's not very pleasant, and all you want to do is just huddle somewhere. So huddle I did. Natalie took care of me. It was very sweet. Gave me crackers, gave me water, gave me fake tea. All those years of tea party practice, you'd think that she would actually be able to conjure up real tea, but no, it's still imaginary tea. I slept. I didn't have the fever dreams. I woke at about 2 o'clock in the morning with a sense that something had broken, and I went back to sleep, happy. And when I woke 6 or 7 hours later from that, I was definitely certain that I was better. And you know how I knew that I was better? Because I went to the grocery store to get some items. Just, yeah, right. As opposed to those times you go to the grocery store simply to observe items or to contemplate items or see what's new. No intention. Oh, no, just window shopping. I went to pick up some things in the cleaning products aisle, specifically white vinegar, Johnson's, Murphy's, Peterson's oil soap, whatever, and a soft scrub with bleach and lemon. Got all these things, and as I looked at the wall of products, the 400 cleaning products at the grocery store, I realized they all made sense. And this was wonderful. It really was, because when you're sick and you have that fevered brain, you find yourself in the grocery store looking at the wall of items. They don't make sense. And you can't make sense of them. And you seem annoyed by the fact that they seem to think that they make sense. All you want to do is go home where there's just one thing, not 400, and that one thing is the bed, which promises sweet unconsciousness. It's very depressing. But when you can stand there in the grocery store and everything pretty much is clicking together like it used to, you know you're better. Incidentally, I've gotten some mail from people who say, gee, you seem to be sick a lot. Well, the fact that I can throw this thing off after a day ought to show that I have a sturdy constitution, strong like bull. And, you know, I live with a kid, and so she's bringing home all kinds of germs all the time. And while I may feel as though I'm coming down with a cold, and frequently mention such, several times in the bleed, I actually rarely get the whole full-blown cold, maybe one a year or so. But I know what you mean. You're concerned, you're worried, and I appreciate that. So I have installed here in the diner. I don't run this place, but they do kind of give me free hand with tinkering. A diagnostic scanner of sorts that shall monitor me and see whether or not I'm doing okay. Let me just call it up here and see what I can get here. Well, there then. See? I'm fine. Regular strong heartbeat, and everything else sounds nice and chirpy. Oh, it could have been much worse, I know. Could have been much worse. I could have had the Asiatic flu.
There's a little bitty bug that's going all around. He's hitting all the cities and he's hitting all the towns. Beetles don't claim him and neither do the fleas, because he makes everybody sneeze. I've got that Asiatic flu. Well, he comes slipping in when you least expect him. Folks are taking those shots to protect him. I got mine just the other day, and now my sneezing's all gone. Up. Still got that Asiatic flu. Your nose will too. Your head will ache and you'll chill and freeze. But most of all, you'll sit and sniff. I've got that Asiatic flu. Now London has a bridge that's known to the world. An evening in Paris will make your hair curl. Russia's always kicking up a hullabaloo. And Asia's got a bug called the that Asiatic flu. Now here we were, just as fine as we could be, when in walked a bug just as big as you please. You know what I think about this here disease? Give it back to the Asians and let them sniff. Everybody's got that Asiatic flu. Everybody's got that Asiatic flu.
And now a word from our sponsor, the Possessed and Emphysemic Bromo Seltzer Train. And now, the news. The diner was the scene of controversy today when a grilled cheese sandwich was served with a pickle wedge instead of a pickle slice. Thank you. I didn't really need that. Are you done? All right. Authorities also note that the ketchup was watery, perhaps because it had been insufficiently stirred before the bottle was opened and served to the customer. Welcome to Stinger Management. Hold on a second. That's enough! I think I'll find a different sounder for the news. That doesn't sound quite right for the diner anyway. Sounds too much like one of those news, weather, sports, traffic. Every 4 minutes here on Radio 44, your source for news, weather, sports, and traffic. Every 4 minutes, traffic, sports, news, and weather. Here on the fours on Radio 44, news, weather, sports, and traffic. Well, let's look at the news. I don't know who listens to those stations. I do find it interesting, however, that that sound, that dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, the telegraph sound still means news. I mean, the telegraph was invented in 1840-whatever, and here in 2006 it's still the sounder that tells you you should pay attention because information is coming. Interesting. Well, let's see what else I can find here on the diner's Cray computer that seems to indicate news is imminent. And now with your news, Boy George. No, I don't think so. All right, let's try this one. Random generic news opener number 74. Ah! Man, it's like an Orson Welles bowel movement. Here it comes again! It's like you versus the news. No, thank you. You know, the problem is, all of these news sounders appear to be written by people who don't listen to the news. Let me try this again here. All right, new criteria. Classic radio network sounders, 60s, 70s. See what that gets me. Ah, much better. That's ABC's classic 60s, 70s news sounder, of course. It's got all of the elements. It's got the dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee played by wooden mallets. It has snare drum there to remind you of the pomp and circumstance of official Washington. And it ends with a wide world of sports fanfare that, well, you just can't help imagining Vic Ratner admiring himself naked in the mirror, can you? Sorry. Let's see if I have anything else from ABC's glory days. And that, of course, is Fanfare for Doug Limerick by John Williams. Well, what I'd really like to find, and I'm sure they're buried somewhere here in the seldom-accessed memory tapes of the Cray, are the 1960s electronic music news introductions that the radio networks used. This may have been Middle America's first introduction, or at least most constant introduction on a daily basis of electronic music, and I have no idea what instruments were used to produce these sounds. Oh, the letters I'm going to get. Thank you in advance. In any case, this stuff fascinated me as a child, but frightened me. It grabbed your attention, and it was very much the sound of the adult world, which had things like Nixon and Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi and the Russians and all these other scary things that were out there waiting on the periphery of Fargo. Well, let's see if I can find a CBS News intro from the 60s. That's the one, that's it. It's like proto-Kraftwerk in the sound of electronic devices communicating news across the land. All right then, well, that will do very nicely. Then back to the news. Today, the Vice President made a stirring rebuke... No, stirring isn't the right word. The Vice President made a stunning rebuke of war... Stunning isn't... I mean, maybe it's stunning to some, but it's kind of a loaded term. What am I going to say? How about if I just got rid of the adjectives entirely? What a thought. Today, the Vice President rebuked critics of the administration's war policy.
And if the hippies and the yippies and the disruptors of the systems that Washington and Lincoln as presidents brought forth in this country will shut up and work within our free system of government, I will lower my voice. And if the Black Panther Party will disclaim its publicized purpose of violence and overthrow of our elected government by force and will run candidates for election in the traditional democratic fashion, I will lower my voice. And if the SDS and the RAM and the PLP will transfer their allegiance from Mao Zedong and Castro and the Viet Cong to the United States of America, I will subside to a more professorial tone.
Graceful charm for me. You couldn't be keener. You look so fresh.
We're practicing something about a diner that Daddy was just talking about. And I don't know if that president thing was all real.
Oh, that was real. That was the vice president from a long time ago.
But you said it wasn't real.
Oh, no, he was real. Oh, he was real.
I meant the story when the president had a very stern talk.
Oh, no, that was a real story. That was the vice president. He's the guy who was underneath the president, so to speak.
Oh, so he took the place before our president?
No, but if the president had gotten sick, he would have been the president.
Oh, so how would you make that story up if it was a long time ago?
Well, he was giving a speech probably back in about 1968, 1969, long before you were born, telling people that if they weren't going to be good citizens, they should shut up.
But shut up is a bad word, and you lived in the old days, so you heard him. And how do you remember it all the way from 1985?
I've got a pretty good memory, but you're right. That was a bad thing to say. Could have been worse, vice presidential terms, but that was not a nice thing to say. But I think he'd had it up to here.
But I don't know if presidents say that word.
Probably not in public.
Probably not even in his house.
Yeah, in the White House, which is very important.
Yeah, and my dad has this bottle from the president's house.
What? I have a bottle from the president's house? Shh, ixnay on the Otto Bay. Yes, yes, yes.
Sorry, Dad.
No, she's absolutely right. This is something that I got from the presidential box at the Kennedy Center, where you're encouraged to lift everything except the towels on the way out.
Private.
No, that's okay, honey. It's perfectly fine. A lot of people, and I've admitted to it anyway. All right, that's enough. We got to go to bed, and I got to drive you home from the diner and tuck you in, so say goodnight, Grace.
I am not saying goodnight.
Yes, you are, honey.
I am not. I am staying with this show.
Well, I paid for this microphone, miss, and so you're the one who's going to have to deal with the consequences.
Next time we do it, I'll be back, so goodbye.
Next time we do it, we'll be back. Bob and Ray couldn't have come up with a more perfectly absurd tagline than that. Well, that does it for this diner, folks. Thanks for dropping by. I'm James Lilacs, and this has been the Diner Podcast for Friday, January 20th, 2006. And remember, next time we do it, we'll be back.